Thank you, Domati. It's 10:09. This is John Williams. We're in the Allstate Showcase studio here on Michigan Avenue as we are Saturday mornings from 10 to noon. Griffin Filipich is our producer, and obviously also in the studios is Sam Panionovich. I will join my colleague Lou Manfredini in wishing Sam a fond farewell. He will work with us today and next Saturday and a little bit in between, but then he'll leave for Las Vegas where he'll be working on Sirius. He'll be on one of these channels where they talk sports, where they talk betting on sports. If ever there was a job for a person, it is that job for you, Sam. So congratulations.
Thank you so much.
A better version of me would be happier for you.
You're happy. You are.
My first reaction when he told me about this in the halls of WGN was, oh, crap. Oh, shoot.
I thought you were going to chase me out the door.
I was so happy for you. And so sad for me, because we so enjoy your company and your expertise here on WGN Radio. But you don't host a Monday through Friday. You don't have 20 hours on the air like some of us do. And you deserve more airtime. And you deserve more time in a place that so suits your skills and interests. And it sounds like the perfect job for you. So I am really happy about that.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate all the support. You know, this weekend crew over the last couple of years has really become my radio family. Now we have Domati is like my cousin. You're one of my uncles, you and Lou. And then tomorrow it's Rick and Dean. And I've been doing this since April of 2016, so coming up on 2 years and getting up early after working all week. And it's been great. I hate to leave, but opportunity just came knocking. And it's a chance, like you said, to have my own show, my own deal. 5 days a week, it's going to be special.
Yeah, Cousin Sam, I did not want to believe it. I think it's fake news. I'm boycotting you. I don't think you'll...
Well, that's what it was. I walked into the newsroom today and could barely hug him.
Yeah,
You didn't even look at me. But you're rocking the chicken dinner t-shirt, so you do support deep down. And you always
Sam also does a podcast called Chicken Dinner that, again, talks about the things that he'll be doing for a living now out west. And it's called Chicken Dinner, and I'm wearing my chicken dinner t-shirt. Griffin, do you have a chicken dinner t-shirt from your cousin,
not
Sam?
Yet, no.
I'm not sure how the family tree works on this. If I'm the uncle, anyway, it's a great opportunity for you, so we're real happy.
Congratulations.
Mm-hmm. Really appreciate it. Thank
you. By the way, speaking of sports, did you see the video on the Chicago Tribune website today? So Maine South is playing Evanston last night. It's at Evanston. Maine South is winning by 2 points. They're shooting a free throw as well. So 2 points, just a couple seconds left. All the Maine South players are on the other side of the court just to guard against a long three-pointer if there's a rebound. The guy shoots the free throw, and he misses it, and there is a rebound. There's a brief scramble for the ball in the lane. And then this kid, Blake Peters, picks up the ball for Evanston in front of his own crowd, down two, and he one-hand throws the ball from just in front of the other basket. It's almost like a one-handed heave shot put. The ball is in the air forever. It misses, the rebound, the throw.
Oh my God.
And he swishes it. What's the length of a basketball court, Sam? 95 feet, something like that? 95 feet. So that ball's in the air for about 89 of them. And swishes, and they win by one at the buzzer. And this is why we love sports. I feel so bad for Maine South. That kid misses the free throw, and you figure it's still safe. There's no way they're going to score. They scored. This is the thing that nothing else can replicate in our lives. Not the arts, not movies, not politics, not TV, not nothing. Nothing gives 1,000 people packed in a place that much heartbreak and that much joy. It's really unparalleled.
80-foot heave. 80-foot. And by the way, a high school floor is 84 feet.
84 feet.
Either way, 80. You throw a football-style pass.
Right.
80 feet with a basketball, and it goes right down the net.
You give me that 1,000 times, I don't think I make it. I don't think I hit the backboard 100.
What if you punted it? Would you make it then?
I was a punter, and no. I do not have any hope of making that shot.
It was one of those moments. If you saw that in a movie, you would swear, "Oh, that! Come on, that's
come on, make it real."
Exactly. That, but
that's
stupid.
That's a stupid ending to the movie.
No magic like the magic in sports, boy.
It was the number one play on SportsCenter's top 10.
Are you serious? I didn't know that.
Yes. Blake Peters.
Fun for
him. A freshman too. A freshman.
Are you kidding me? I'll segue from there to a more serious subject. In fact, a deadly one, so serious. And that is the proposal in Illinois now. This is from Representative Carol Sent, who was in our studios with Anna DeVlantis and Justin Kaufman this week. Justin was in for Ro Khan. She, Carol, is the Vernon Hills Democrat. She's a state lawmaker. She introduced something called the Dave Duerson Act, and this is what it will say, that kids under 12 can't play tackle football in Illinois. Because of CTE, because of concussions, kids under 12 cannot play tackle football. Now, I'm a contrarian at times, and I said the problem with this is that that means kids at the age of 13, when they're bigger and faster and stronger, will for the first time be hitting their heads against each other. And that's a bad time for them to learn the proper technique. If you want to teach kids how to do it safely, they'd better learn when they're 8, because when they're 13, they're going to be going a lot faster and the collisions will be more impactful. So if you're going to protect them, I'm not sure that that's actually doing what you think it will do. There's a story in the Tribune today, and it says there's no scientific consensus that 12 or 11 is a threshold below which tackle football becomes more dangerous. That's according to a CTE researcher who works with Pop Warner, so consider the source. But he's saying, I'm not sure this makes any sense. And they also quote the Concussion Legacy Foundation. There they say that research has shown a correlation between the duration of a player's career and the probability of getting CTE. It's not just the impact, it's the number of hits over your life. So if we shorten it by 4 years, say instead of at 8, you start at 12, maybe that's a good thing. But they also say that there's no real evidence that 11 or 12-year-olds are doing things that lead to CTE. The point is you're getting a lot of mixed information here. The Tribune's editorial today goes on at great length. This is the Tribune editorial detailing how bad the sport is for our kids and for our brains. I mean, they cite other studies. And boy, you read this thing, and it will give you pause if you have a kid, and that kid wants to play football. Get him a lacrosse stick and let him hit each other in the head with a big old piece of wood. At the end of the editorial, they say this. The children of Illinois do not need a law, however, well-intended, to blow a whistle on tackle football at this or that age. This is a job for parents, school officials, and organizers of youth sports. And I'm just asking you about that this morning. I want to start. You call or text 312-981-7200. Do you have kids that play or grandkids that play? And are you worried about them? And do you think that there should be a law about this? I'm one of these guys that's always against the nanny state. I don't like the government telling us what to do. Football's legal. We love the sport. And the kids at 12, 10, 9, 8, they seem to me like they're kind of running in slow motion. You've never heard a real pop when you watch those little kids play. It worries me more if you had a kid in high school. I talked about this over the week with Steve Bertrand. What a shame. What a decision for you to make as a family if your son is a really good football player. Lord, what if he could go to Northwestern someday and play and get an education out of that? I mean, it's so tempting. It's so much fun. And yet, this is a dilemma that swimmers and tennis players and even basketball and baseball players, they don't have to worry about this, really. I know Chris Dunn is out with a concussion, but really that's the exception. How fortunate for the parents of kids who excel at safe sports. If you're the parent of a kid who excels at football, you have a decision to make. And I don't think that's easy.
The NFL just released their preliminary injury report. They do this every year, okay? Concussions in the preseason, just the preseason, were up 73% from a year ago.
Think about that.
That's the preseason. That's not counting the regular season and the playoffs. Those reports, those numbers will continue to come in. But in the preseason in the NFL, concussions were up 73% in 2017.
Bertrand asked me this week, he said, have you ever been on the sidelines of an NFL game? I said, no. Well, Steve was for years. He said, those guys are like missiles. They just come running and flying at each other. That's their career. And I'm glad my son never wanted to play football. Griffin was never interested, and Grant was a little bit, and then he got out there, and after about a week, he goes, yeah, I'm not in for football. And this was in a different era. This was about 12, 15 years ago, whatever. We said, you went out for the team. You have an obligation to these boys. You have to stay on the team. My attitude's different now. I don't want kids hitting their heads. But we made him stay on the football team that whole season, and he did not like any of it. He did not like a lick of it. I'm wondering what you think about this. 312-981-7200. Your kid plays? Hey, Dave, this is John. You're on the air. What do you want to say? Hi, Dave. Are you there?
Oh, yes. Hi. I'm a 72-year-old grandfather. My dad played college football down at Augustana there in Rock Island. And I played football. My son played football. We all loved it and followed, you know, college and pro. And I've got a grandson now in the western suburbs. He's 17. But he played tackle football as an 8- or 9-year-old, played in the line, and long story short, he decided to go the baseball route. But I saw the championship 8-year-old, I got to say it was for safe 9-year-old, outstanding athlete on the one team. And he was a halfback, and I bet he scored 5 touchdowns. But on the opposing team, there was outstanding linebacker, and boy, he got some hits. And I stood there and I thought, is this young man at 8 or 9 years old as good an athlete? Is he going to make it? You know, is he going to make it into college or make it in it? So I kind of changed my mind on youth football there. I know when my son was, it was 6th grade before they started tackle football. And I guess that's my position on it. I just think it's too young to start that.
That's interesting. I'm you know, thank you for the call. Dave, I'm glad you joined us. Listen to this in the Tribune editorial. Among the findings, youths who began playing football before 12 had twice the risk of troubles associated with executive functioning, behavioral regulation, and apathy, as well as 3 times the risk of clinically elevated depression scores. At a time when the brain is developing, the kids who play football have more risk for behavioral issues and depression than kids who don't play football. That's a tough one. That's a tough call.
Wow.
It's 1021. More of your calls in a minute. After the 1030 news, it's 1024 here on WGN. A terrible medical story we'll have to tell you about. Oprah Winfrey has been discovered to have 3 hands, and it gets worse. Reese Witherspoon now has 3 legs. We'll discuss. Tonight on WGN-TV, mall walking with some sassy 70-year-olds. That's on the next Man of the People with Pat Tomasulo. Watch Man of the People tonight at 10, only on WGN-TV. A couple of Randys, a couple of Mikes. This is Randy on line 2. I'm sorry, this is... Hi, Randy. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, I've been a high school official for a referee for the last 10 years, and I do about 50 youth games a year. And I think this law is absolutely well coming at a perfect time. You know, you're right, and what they're saying is, you know, that you may not learn proper coaching. I will tell you right now, at the 8, 9, 10, 11-year-old ages, 75% of the time, they're still not getting proper coaching. You still have parents.
Now Randy's cutting out, but I think I know what he's telling Griffin, that a lot of the well-intended coaches that are trying to teach these kids don't exactly know the best way to teach them anyway. Randy, you still there? Yeah, he just clicked out. So from Randy to Dave on line 3. Hey, Dave, you're on the air. Thanks for joining us. What did you want to say?
Hey, John. You know, I have 2 boys. I've watched them from, let's say, 6 to 12, and I'm not sure I actually understand this, and I'm not against anybody who believes in it. I believe in it, too. I'm not saying that at all, but I mean, it's almost ridiculous at the age of 6 and 7. I mean, they look like little bobbleheads, so reluctant to hit anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, me and my wife got a kick out of it because of the way it looked, more or less than anything else. I mean, when they get touched, they fall down. And then when you're talking about at 12 years old, yes, it is a little bit different. And yes, there are some kids that are much better than other, bigger than other. But still, even at that age, it almost seemed like there was only 2, 3, maybe 4 children on each team that were actually willing to hit. You know, it's a sport. If they get the right coaching, I'm all for it. But I did not allow either one of my sons to go into high school and play football. Neither one of them, except for my oldest, was actually really wanting to. He's a baseball player anyway. But my point is that at these ages, I don't know if anybody's actually been out there to see these kids play. It's almost a reluctancy to play full speed or to get hit or to be a hitter. And I don't know what this law is going to do for that, because if you're watching these kids play, it really isn't the aggressive type of football that high school or college is.
There's a moment of truth when you watch your kids play, and soccer is the same way. Some kids are real aggressive. They'll go right into the scrum, hell, mel, and they'll just kick the ball and kick a shin or get kicked. They don't care. They have that gene. And it's the same way with football. There comes a moment where football looks fun, and then you put on a helmet, you get out there, and you go, oh, I don't think I want to do this. And some kids take to it, and some don't. There's no doubt about that. No doubt about that. I appreciate your phone call. Thanks for joining us. It's 1027. Tribune's editorial today said that however well-intentioned the law is, this is up to parents to decide, not the legislators. The Dave Duerson Act is what it's called. Stay tuned. It's 2:20. It's 10:27, almost 10:28 now. Don Mattei's going to do the news. Okay, let's play a little game here called Higher or Lower before we get to the Reese Witherspoon, Oprah Winfrey sprouting of extra appendages story. It's 10:38 on WGN. I'm John Williams Griff. Sam, Don Mattei, you can all play. In an ad for the
Higher
Auction House Heritage Auctions in last Sunday's New York Times, they say, we'll take consignments from your really cool stuff and we'll all get rich. And then they give examples of items that people have consigned to them and they were able to sell at auction. I'm asking you to tell me first, what do you think the price was for the first edition Harry Potter? J.K. Rowling, or do you say Rowling? Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone first edition sold last year for how much? Griff, you go first. Just give me a ballpark. What do you think? I'm not good at this game. I don't expect you to be real good.
Yeah, okay. $1.5 million.
$1.5 million.
I'm going to go $50,000.
Yeah, that's better.
I actually agree. I was going to say $50,000. No joke. So I'll agree with Domati. $50,000.
But what would I pay? $1.5 million. A cool $1.5 million.
$81,000.
Wow.
$81,000.
Wow.
They had a Bob Dylan owned and stage played 1963 Martin D28 acoustic guitar. I guess all that means something. Bottom line to me is it's a Martin, it's Dylan, he played it on stage.
Do you know when he played it on stage?
No. So did that go for more or less than the Harry Potter book?
More.
More. Got to be more.
$81,000 for Harry Potter. How much for the Dylan guitar?
I'm going to go $500,000.
$500,000.
Yeah, $350,000.
Sammy, $350, $1 million. What do you say?
He's at $500,000.
$500,000.
Okay, yeah, sure. $500,000.
Here's the correct answer, Griffin. You said $350. It was $396.
Wow.
$396.5. What do you do with a $400,000 guitar? Do you play it?
No, you frame it and hang it up.
That must have been him playing it in the '60s.
Okay. But
I'm just saying, the time matters on that.
Yeah.
Nobody cares about a Bob Dylan guitar from the 90s.
I guess so.
Or
right. This is when he was doing...
Less so, anyway.
Right. His folky, protesty
stuff.
They
are changing. I'm assuming it must have been.
Think about that. Some of that DNA still on the strings of that thing.
I always wonder who buys them.
That's the thing. I mean, somebody... I don't know. It's like the guy that spent the millions of dollars for that painting a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, what was that, like $450 million? I mean, that we should still be talking about that. That's so outrageous.
I think it was a Saudi prince, right? It was somebody from Saudi Arabia or the United Arab Emirates.
Maybe like China or Russia. I don't know.
All right, let's move on. So we're $396 for the Dylan guitar. How about this? A Casablanca original poster. An original poster for Casablanca, the movie.
Mm.
We're $396 on the guitar, by the way. Is the poster more or less, Griff?
Less.
I'd say less. How about you, Sammy?
More. More.
Dominator?
More. I'm in the... less. I'm going to say less. Let's call it $200,000.
How about you, Sam? Put a price on that thing.
What was the original, you said?
It's a 1947 original Casablanca poster for the movie. At all the gin joints and all the towns and all the worlds, you had to walk in a mine. By the way, what was the first price you gave, though? The value. I didn't give you any prices. I said that the Bob Dylan guitar was $396. I'm asking you if this is more or less.
I'd say $450,000.
Correct answer is $478,000. $478,000.
I'm pretty good at this.
And finally, a Lou Gehrig game-worn jersey. New York Yankees. I don't know the game. I don't know if he wore it in the World Series. 1937 Lou Gehrig game-worn New York Yankees jersey. Shoot me a number, Mr. Sports.
That one's going to be over half a mil for sure, because some guy's crazy and probably paid about $600,000.
$870,000.
And what are you going to do with any of these except put it in your house and look at it?
No, that you wear to sleep, Griff.
You wear that to sleep?
Yes. Every night.
But I'm just saying the poster is actually the most useful for what it's going to be used for.
That's right. What is the poster supposed to do?
Yeah,
it's supposed to be on the wall. I'm playing that Bob Dylan guitar. If I'm going to spend $400,000, I want to commune with Bob Dylan from 1965.
I've seen you play guitar, and I don't think there would be any communing going on.
John, I picture you at the Yankees game wearing that jersey, getting mustard on that. You know, you take a bite of the hot dog on that $800,000 jersey.
With your guitar with you at the game.
With the guitar.
How did you get Dippin' Dots all over Lou Gehrig's famous jersey? I was communing with him.
I always think that when these sorts of stories happen, I know how it is at our house. Brenda and I have a pretty free flow. She never argues with me about a purchase I want to make, and I don't argue with her with the purchase she's going to make. You know, we don't get crazy, and if we did have a major purchase, we talk about it. But a lot of times she's sitting there on her iPad, and she's looking at our bank account, click, 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 and she goes, oh, I see somebody went to Starbucks today. She's just kidding me a little bit because there's a $3 purchase, and we got free coffee in the building, whatever. Brenda doesn't buy Starbucks. Sometimes I do. So she'll just kind of call me out on that. Click, 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 click. Honey! What's this $872,000?
Yeah, how do you explain?
Honey, I just want you to know baseball means a lot to me, okay? And when I saw that thing, granted I was drunk, it was 2 a.m, but I had to click yes. I clicked send. I bought the thing.
We'd like to rack our brains over this, like, how could anyone do this? But the answer is pretty simple. They have too much money. Yeah. There are people that have way too much money.
Yeah. Yeah,
and it's like that's the end of conversation.
That's God's way of telling you got too much cash. That and heroin, to quote somebody famous who
maybe
died.
He was on heroin when he bought the jersey.
It's really, if you have that much money to just hang on the wall, think about that. You're just like, you know what I want to do, Griff? If I get $500,000, I'm going to hang $500,000 on the wall.
Well, that
Now that would be cool. Now that would be cool.
I
get a bunch of thousand. I get $500,000 bills, and I would frame them and I would make an image of me sitting on a golden throne. Yeah, that's the ticket. That's what I do.
You're doing a John Mulaney bit. You don't even know it, but you are. He's in town next week, and he has a line that's this is not good radio to just quote him. Sorry, but it's exactly the same. He says, "There's these movies that cost $200 million. You didn't have to make a movie with that money." You could have just shown me $200 million. Very funny.
It's 10:45. What do you all make? This is a serious question. My number is 312-981-7200. Call or text to this. I have never gotten really exercised about those stories about how ads that unrealistically show people more beautiful than they are impact teenage girls. Right? in the latest issue of Vanity Fair. It's their annual Hollywood edition. And around award season time, as we get close to the Oscars, there's 12 of Hollywood's most famous and beautiful people. There's Oprah Winfrey and Reese Witherspoon and Nicole Kidman and Harrison Ford. And they're all Tom Hanks, looking splendid, arms around each other. Imagine the 12 of those in a room. And then Annie Leibovitz taking their picture. And it's just swell to look at. The dresses are beautiful. The men are tuxedoed. It's just, you know, like, this is as good as Earth gets. And then what do? But they Photoshop the images. They brush out pimples and wipe away wrinkles and make waistlines thinner. And in doing so, in manipulating, you'd think that those people would be beautiful enough and Annie Leibovitz would be talented enough that you wouldn't need to adjust those photos. But of course they do. And in doing so, they made a couple of mistakes. In the spread, in one photo, poor Oprah Winfrey has three hands. And Reese Witherspoon has three legs. In another one, you go, wait, here's the leg coming down here. But then the legs are kind of wrapped around onto Oprah's lap, sort of. And it's one, two. There are three legs for Reese Witherspoon. They're all laughing it off and dismissing it. But other people are, I'll say, outraged. That may be an overstatement. About this is another example of what CVS, the drugstore chain, has decided to ban. Did you see this year, just this month, they announced that they will not allow companies to display banners or posters or ads in their stores that manipulate the photos. I think this is fascinating. 9,600 stores nationwide. CVS is one of the nation's largest sellers of beauty products. The president said the decision reflects the acknowledgement that unrealistic body images are a significant driver of health images for women. 80% of their customers are ladies. To try and hold ourselves up like those women is impossible because even those women don't look like how they appear in those photographs. It'll go into effect April of 2019, and if the companies don't comply, then they'll put icons on the ads in the store that say these images have been digitally modified. They'll print it like a warning on cigarette packages. So good for them. The nation's largest drugstore chain bans photo manipulation. Here's the last thing I'll say about it, and then I just want your reaction to it. I think we're all hypocrites on this issue. I think if you have a chance to look at those 12 people in Vanity Fair as pretty as they can look, you want that. We all know that we're not going to be in their company. We all know that they're prettier than us, and we all know that this goes on. If the images are blended or shaded a little bit to make them look prettier than they are, I think that's not such a big deal, and that actually, side by side, your eyes would fall on the prettier one. It's like an artwork. Do you want to look at the prettier artwork or the less pretty artwork? You want to look at the prettier one. If you know going in that that's what's happening out there, I don't know that I'm entirely outraged by it. It's not like I'm going to be standing next to Tom Hanks at the Dunkin' Donuts in the morning, and I'll go, boy, I wish I looked like Tom Hanks. He's standing right here, and I'm put to shame. I don't see the harm in it that way. I want you to call me right now and give me your thoughts about this, especially if you have daughters. 312-981-7200. Text to that number, too. This is WGN. One more note about that Vanity Fair spread that has three hands for Oprah and three legs for Reese. Vanity Fair joked about it. They said, how can we expect Oprah Winfrey to juggle all the things she has to without three hands? Incidentally, in the same issue, James Franco was digitally removed from the issue after being originally photographed by Annie Leibovitz. He was replaced in the photo shoot by a more favorable picture of Joseph Stalin. I'm just kidding about the Stalin thing. Let's go to, help me with the names here, Griff. I'm just reading the screen. Enith, you're on WGN. How are you?
Hi, I'm great. How are you?
Good. What did you want to say?
So I'm with Guardian Angel Community Services in Joliet. We've been serving the Chicagoland area for decades. We have domestic violence and sexual assault programs, and we work with teens and girls. And just regarding this issue, you know, when kids are looking at these images, they do end up comparing themselves to a standard that, like you said, just can't be reached. Now, as adults, and especially as adults, an adult male, perhaps, obviously, the perception is different, and we have
life experiences, and, you know, so we can tell the difference between what's real and what isn't. But they internalize these differences, and then it leads to maladaptive or high-risk behaviors of, you know, bulimia or anorexia, you know, impact self-esteem and everything else. So yeah. It really, you know, when you're exposed to this over time, it really takes a toll, especially then you add to that our, you know, world's emphasis on looks and all of those kinds of things, which, again, as adults, we process in a different way. But as kids, it does really have an impact.
It's interesting. Then you must love what CVS is doing. They're not going to put those posters in their drugstores.
Yeah, well, I think that it's just sending a message that it's something to pay attention to. I mean, marketing and gender-based roles has been studied for decades. I remember studying it in grad school a long, long time ago. So this is not something new, but I think people paying attention more and more to what is impacting our youth in this way is really important.
I'm really glad you called. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
I was on a flight one time, long flight, and the guy sitting next to me had a really good kind of, I guess it was a laptop, better than the one I had. Anyway, he was doing this. He was some sort of photo editor, and he had pictures of models, and he was going over and over them with a tool on the screen, and he was shading the skin, and he was making changes really deliberately that I almost couldn't see the before and after. But he'd work on it and then click and work on it and click and click and click, and subtly, slowly, he was changing the image of these models. And I couldn't, you know, I was one of those guys sitting next to you on an airplane you don't want to be sitting next to because the guy keeps staring at you like, hey, buddy, get your eyes out of my lap. But it was fascinating to watch him do that. And Griff, you were reading about, do you have the story or do I, about an app on phones that are very popular in Asia, right?
This was a piece in the New Yorker, I don't know, maybe a month ago or so, about a company. It's basically about a company called Meitu, I think is how you pronounce it, and it's a company with a few different apps with names like Beauty Plus, Beauty Cam, Selfie City, and they smooth out skin, exaggerate features, and brighten eyes. I'm reading from it now. The apps are installed on more than a billion phones, mostly in China, but increasingly in the West. The apps generate some 6 billion photos a month, and it's estimated that more than half the selfies on Chinese social media have been edited using their products.
And it has like a beauty, a beautification number?
It's using the Beauty Plus app. You select a beauty level from 1 to 7, a progressive scale of paleness.
I want 7. Go ahead.
A progressive scale of paleness and freckle deletion. then we could smooth out tone, slim, and contour our faces. And it goes on. And the gist, and what I found most interesting is that Jiang Fan is the writer, and she presented it like it was a faux pas to post a selfie without using this technology, that her friends would almost not consider doing it. And the fact that you regard this as a curiosity and something that's fine, you know, it seems more prevalent over there, but
yeah.
I just completely disagree with you on this. It's so weird to me that you think that there's really like, or you originally presented it as something you don't really have a problem with.
You know, what I'm also hearing is, you know how you hate it when everybody else seems to be having more fun on Facebook? And imagine if then they were digitally altering the photos so they were looking prettier on Facebook, too, or in social media. I had no idea that app was out there. It's 10:58. We're a couple minutes away from news. Domitee's going to do that. The Mincing Rascals, our roundtable talk, not only about state politics, but what's going on in Washington, D.C. That's coming up, too. Mincing Rascals got really wound up about state politics, about the run for Illinois Attorney General, about the run for governor. You'll hear all of that in just a minute. The Mincing Rascals, a podcast we record weekly at the studios at WGN Radio. We do it on Thursdays and post it Thursday about 5. There's a fun video there. And then a roundtable featuring some really smart friends of ours from the Chicago Tribune and Steve Bertrand. Today's broadcast in part of the Mincing Rascals podcast includes our own Patty Vasquez, who you hear pretty late on WGN Radio, weeknights from 11 to 12 or 11 to 2. Steve Bertrand Bertrand from the GN Radio Newsroom and Chicago Tribune columnist Eric Zorn are in the mix this week. We were talking about the president saying that he would love to talk to Robert Mueller. He said he would be happy to testify. About that, Steve Bertrand said,
the lead of that comment from the president wasn't that he's dying to talk to Mueller. It's what he said next. But I'm going to rely on the advice of my counsel.
Yeah.
That's what he said. So what they're doing is they're paving the way for him to say, oh, I'd love to do it, but my lawyers say I just can't.
Or Steve, he can't do that.
He can't.
He can take the Fifth. But he doesn't. We've established this. Bill Clinton had to testify.
He was subpoenaed, right?
And ultimately, Mueller holds the cards here. Ultimately, Mueller can make him talk.
Don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying that Mueller won't make him talk. I'm saying what the president said was, gee, I'd love to talk, but I'm going to rely on my lawyers. And you watch. They're going to come out and say that his lawyers are advising him not to talk or to only submit written questions.
Right.
He's going to rely on that.
And if Mueller lets him, Mueller lets him. But Mueller doesn't have to let him. I mean, there are any number of ways you could do it.
I think that Trump is like Jack Nicholson in A Few Good Men. He wants to testify. He can't wait to say everything that's on his mind.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth. Well,
the problem that he has is that he's a compulsive liar. I think it's just like a fact, right? And the guy can't, he bloviates. You pointed out how many lies do they count the first year? I mean, he can't help it. And he'll fall and he'll commit perjury.
But is it a lie when you believe it? It seems like it doesn't matter what it is. He seems to believe everything he says.
You sure about that, Steve?
I think you look great today, but that doesn't make it true.
So I think a lot of us have been waiting for the Tom Cruise moment.
Did you order the code red?
I did the job.
Did you order the code red?
You're damn right I did.
But he's never been under the sort of white hot light of, say, a congressional committee. And you know he wants to talk. Yes. You know he wants to upset the apple cart. That's his MO.
And you know that he fired James Comey to try to short-circuit the investigation into collusion with Russia.
He's damn right, I fired Comey!
One of the most interesting things that he said in this little back and forth with reporters was he said, there's no collusion. And then he said, and there's no obstruction. I fought back. Nothing wrong with fighting back. Well, it's an investigation. It's not you against the police. If you see it that way, you probably are obstructing justice. That's the kind of thing that someone who obstructed justice would say. I was fighting back.
It was relatively new that he even brought up obstruction of justice, because usually in that,
just no collusion.
There's no collusion.
Don't you think what's lost in all of this, too, is what was this all about to begin with? It was about the Russians hacking the election. And now that doesn't seem to be paramount. I mean, that's what got Clinton in trouble. That was not an investigation about Monica Lewinsky. It was about a real estate transaction.
Well, it could be that both tracks are pretty active. I mean, we don't make the mistake of, flying with the wind of the media where, right now, this week, the coverage has been, it looks like they're focusing on the obstruction of justice. But that doesn't mean they're not still focusing on that June meeting or on Michael Flynn's meeting with Kislyak and all those things.
What do you guess is more probable, that Trump would be found guilty of obstruction or that Trump was involved in hacking the election with the Russians?
I'm going to go with obstruction because he'd said it on national TV. Okay.
And the reason, go ahead.
No, I just said I wouldn't be surprised if something else, like in a, feel the dreams, look out for in your ear, is all I'm saying. There might be another thing.
I'm sorry, that reference is lost.
It's when the kid's going up to bat, Moonlight Graham's going up to bat, and he's trying to figure out what the pitcher's like. And he goes, well, what kind of pitches have you gotten so far? Low and outside. And he goes, or it'll be in your ear. So he goes, it'll be low and outside. And he goes, but look out for in your ear. And the pitcher throws it in his ear.
I'm saying
look out for in your ear. So if you think it's going to be one thing, I'm saying look out for in your ear.
The reason that I said I was increasingly alarmed.
A long way to go.
Everybody else got
movie
that.
Chat, but no, it's good to know. The reason that I said in my self-intro that I'm increasingly alarmed was that the thing that's alarming me these days is the Republican Party's fight against the FBI and against this
secret society.
The secret society they're forming, the conspiracy theories that they've been floating about, that the FBI is out to perform a coup d'etat or somehow undermine the government and oust Trump from office. They're trying and they're throwing up all this smoke because they want to discredit Mueller's investigation because I think they know where it's going. It's getting a lot of traction.
The guy who knows the secret society champion better than anyone here is John Williams.
How's that?
Ron Johnson was on TV. I think he was on Fox.
Oh, the senator from Wisconsin.
Yeah, right. You used to talk to him
all the time.
And he's talking about this quote-unquote secret society, which, as I understand it, was a joke the day after the president was elected. These two FBI agents said, oh, we're going to have to form a secret society. And now he's
And this has become a whole thing on Fox News.
It's but there's 50,000 missing email messages.
Not just from them. Apparently, there's a whole glitch from in a time period that the FBI
lost
all of its text messages.
So what does that say, though, about the
text messages?
Right.
Text messages. But, I mean, does that compromise whatever the investigation will discover?
Well, what the investigation discovers is what it discovers. It really doesn't matter, at the end of the day, if an investigator is biased against somebody or is trying to exonerate them, the facts are going to be the facts. If you've got, you know, people perjuring themselves, if you have, you know,
says you, Eric.
Bias implies taking action on your beliefs.
Right.
Right. There's nothing wrong. There's no you are able to have your personal opinions. You're just not able to prosecute those personal opinions if the fact doesn't match that.
Yeah,
so just on its face that these two were exchanging anti-Trump messages isn't necessarily bad. It's if their work is clouded by that. And don't forget, and we keep forgetting this. You know, the FBI was supposedly against the Clintons late in the campaign. James Comey came out and gave that revelation that they were reopening, which was incredibly damaging, perhaps mortally damaging to Hillary Clinton. And he did it because there were agents in the FBI who didn't like Hillary Clinton, who he thought were going to leak the information.
And how many texts do we go back through investigations through decades or, you know, messages back and forth or conversations disparaging a president or somebody else?
I think there's three things here. One is, do you have thoughts about a candidate? And everybody does. If you're in the FBI, it doesn't change that fact.
Yeah.
So you could be pro-Hillary, anti-Trump. That does not disqualify you. Number two, then, is can you or do you share those with a colleague? And I don't know that disqualifies you. The only thing, Eric, I think that should be actionable or really alarming is, do you act on those biases? And we don't have any evidence of that.
Well, they weren't. And even if they were,
they've been gone since
June, right? These two agents have been out of this investigation since June. So anything that's happened after that, you know, you can throw these two bad apples into it, but they don't change the fact that Michael Flynn pleaded guilty, that Papadopoulos pleaded guilty, that Paul Manafort they weren't indicted because these two lovers were exchanging anti-Trump. And weren't some of these exchanges also against Chelsea Clinton? They had plenty of, they were pissed at a lot of people.
Let's talk about the run for governor in Illinois. They had a candidates forum. Why is everybody so interested? They asked the candidates, say something nice about your opponent, right? And Chris Kennedy had a chance to say something nice about J.B. Pritzker, and he couldn't come up with something.
After Pritzker had said something
really nice
about his family.
Kennedy, yeah.
His work for Special Olympics, which is obviously
his family.
Yes.
Yeah, it wasn't directly about Chris Kennedy, but it was...
It was so bumbling and just awkward and awful.
5 seconds of silence.
Mr. Pritzker and Mr. Kennedy, let me start with the two of you on this. Can each of you name a positive thing your opponent has brought to this race? Mr. Kennedy?
And he was blinking, and then you got a chance to focus on how he looked and how... I mean, it just looked awful.
Well, Chris Kennedy doesn't play well that way anyway. I mean, I'm not saying he's not a good guy. I'm just saying
he's not a very good candidate.
He's not a good candidate. He's not an eloquent speaker. He's not smooth the way, I don't know.
And this comes right on the heels of him saying nice things about Governor Rauner, saying Governor Rauner speaks truth to power.
It's very strange.
By the way, Eric, I went back and listened to the 12-minute or 15-minute Pritzker-Blagojevich tape.
Okay.
There's an AG I can appoint, JB.
Doing the right thing for the people.
Are you a lawyer?
Yeah.
And you're right, there's no there. It looks bad that Blago and JB are having a 12-minute conversation, 15-minute conversation, but it's not. It should not be damaging. It might be.
For anybody that wanted to be in public service or be in the government at that time, and if you have the power that JB Pritzker did at the time and still does, who else would you talk to? You would talk to the governor of Illinois. That was the guy holding the ball.
And it looked like there were going to be some nice openings coming up. And he didn't offer money. I mean, he was... Yeah.
But Chris McQuarrie, who's not here and frequently joins us and is dynamite on this subject, really took issue with the fact that Pritzker had Blago's personal phone number and that conversation happened at all.
Well, Kristen is above reproach.
Whenever she says something like that, I go, I guess I'm wrong then, because I thought it was no big deal.
Look, if someone is hosting a radio show on a radio station and they leave, the other hosts or the would-be hosts are going to call the program director and say, hey, you're great. I love you. You've got great taste. I'd like to have that job.
Is it wrong to take tobacco money if you are running for Illinois Attorney General? This is another office that's in play. At a Tribune-hosted candidates forum, several Democrats made their cases for outgoing Lisa Madigan's job, and their state senator Kwame Raoul was attacked for taking campaign contributions from tobacco companies. The AG's office is in charge of enforcing that national tobacco settlement.
What corporations can, what column do we put everybody in to decide whether it's okay to take that money?
Yeah, I'm more concerned with them taking money from law firms, and Lisa Madigan has made millions of dollars from law firms' campaign contributions. I mean, start there if you're going to start to block people.
Yeah, I don't like any of it, frankly. I think anytime you've got business with the state or municipality or with a candidate, you shouldn't be able to give money to them. And it's
sure,
a cesspool of conflicts like that. But it's not limited to this, so I don't have a particular problem with this one. But I've got a problem in general with that.
I agree.
I got to say, I thought Kristen McQuarrie did a great job moderating that debate between the attorney general.
Well, that
candidates.
Was her debate, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's her debate. She did great, and I thought Carol Marine was fantastic.
Oh, she stole the show on that.
Yeah, I mean,
why do you say that?
Carol Marine on the governor's debate.
Yeah, why do you say that?
She was terrific.
Oh, when Biss would sort of she told him at the beginning, "I'm not going to let you filibuster." So Biss would go off into a different direction, and she'd be like, "Answer the question."
Yeah,
she kept them all on the page.
I didn't see that, and I'm sorry to hear that because Daniel Biss, the professor from the University of Chicago, now he's a state senator, but he's a mathematician, and I like his.
John has the guy crush on Daniel Biss.
I totally do. I like Biss.
I've had him on the show many times, but I've seen a change in him in the last year. And that show from the very beginning with the choice
now
of Rosa,
being more evasive.
Well, yeah, when I've had him in the studio, I'm like, I'm sitting there waving. I'm like, dude, what happened here? what's going on?
Well, so, it's probably got to be a lot.
Addie,
more careful
thank you for asking that question.
Right. Well, he's not.
He's an excellent candidate. I think that he clearly showed that he's being sort of.
I would not say he's an excellent candidate. I'd say he's got some shortcomings as a candidate. I like a lot of his
good
positions, but as a candidate, he needs some work. But
yes.
It's
Eric Zorn and Patty Vasquez there. Eric Zorn, Chicago Tribune columnist. Patty Vasquez, who you hear pretty late weeknights on WGN Radio from 11 p. to 2 a. joining the mix, and of course our Steve Bertrand. That's called The Mincing Rascals. It's a podcast we hope you listen to in full. It goes about a half hour usually. We post it every Thursday around 5 p.m. It always includes a short little video. And we also post it on my Facebook page. I'm King John there. Some very, very funny things happening on my Facebook page these days. I recommend you check that out if you're clicking around today. It's 11:25 on WGN. We'll pause here in a minute and then update you on WGN Radio News. Griffin's got a few things he wants to bounce off of us, and we'll score in our Vibe Score segment. Just one last note about The Mincing Rascals. That's the podcast that we record at WGN Radio. It should be part of your weekly podcast listening. So we just referenced in there that taped conversation Governor Blagojevich had with J.B. Pritzker from years ago, and they're trying to make J.B. look bad now. And now, and I don't know if this is going to be in Domati's newscast, but they've gone back and listened to more of the Blago tapes, and they found a conversation, unfortunately, that I had with Blagojevich. That's part of the record, and for some reason, Bruce Rauner is going to run that as well.
This is the unedited Rod Blagojevich FBI wiretap.
Rod, it's John Williams from GN Radio again. How are you? How's the hair?
What follows is the full, unedited, original FBI wiretap recordings obtained by the Chicago Tribune.
Do you watch Dancing with the Stars?
Viewer discretion is advised.
Are you a lawyer?
No. But I got an A on my constitution test in eighth grade.
Huh?
But wait a minute, I want to be clear about this. It took me two tries, so...
Huh?
So listen, I'm calling about a dance contest that I'm going to be in. You know, dancing?
Go ahead.
Like Dancing with the Stars?
Go ahead.
It's a cancer fundraiser with Arthur Murray, and I was...
Hang on one second, hang on. Hey, go ahead.
Okay, so I'm looking for donations. Listen, I'm going to be dancing.
Oh, interesting. Let's think about that. You interested in that?
Well, sure. I like to dance.
Madigan is pushing labor to try to push Lisa.
No, Lisa Madigan isn't in this thing.
Huh?
So can I count on your pledge? $50, $100, right?
I mean, I'm not promising. I'm just saying these are all scenarios.
It's kind of nice to see somebody shaking Blago down. But for some reason, that's in the record now, and I wish they hadn't run that. Just on behalf of all of us here at WGN, I apologize. We're embarrassed by that revelation, but there it is. I can't do anything about it. By the way, the dancing that we're referring to, you'll hear more about soon. But the folks at Arthur Murray put on a Chicago celebrity Dancing with the Stars thing. Lou Manfredini's done it. I believe Mary Vandeveld's done it. Jared Payton's done it. I'll be representing the station this time. And boy, you have a lot more respect for the people that do that when you try and do it yourself, because it's hard to do it and look good. Anyway, we'll post some videos of that and tell you more about how you can make a donation to fight breast cancer. That's what this is all about. Thank you to the folks from Arthur Murray, particularly the folks I've met over at the Lakeview location. One, by the way, one of those references that you just heard Sam Panionovich mention was that he's going to be leaving WGN Radio. This will not be Sam's last Saturday with us, but it will be his second to last one. Super Bowl Saturday will be his last Saturday broadcast on WGN Radio, and then he'll be taking a job. And then fill in that blank. What exactly are you going to be doing in Vegas?
I'll be hosting. Eventually, I'll have a daily show on XM 204, which is VSiN, Vegas Stats and Information Network. It's sports for Vegas. It's numbers and odds and spreads and bets and line science. And as you know, the Supreme Court is ruling on this pretty soon, possibly legalizing gambling and sports betting around the country. So the industry is growing. It gets bigger and better every day. And we're the place to go to check out all your betting needs.
So in some ways, what you'll be doing will sound like a sports radio show, particularly if you follow those fantasy sports things. But in this case, it's more about the odds. So if you're betting on games or outcomes, then this would be helpful information.
Definitely. We'll talk mostly about, you know, spreads and all that. And daily fantasy is big now, too. So we'll make lineups and all that. But, I mean, if there's a big sports topic, we won't shy away from it. It's not just all gambling all the time. It's our niche. It's what we will drive home for the most part. But we'll talk about Horizon League basketball, which doesn't get any coverage because, you know, in a big city like Chicago, most people don't talk about college sports. So we'll put a spotlight on, you know, games and teams and towns and all that, and it'll be fun. I can't wait to get to work.
I think you're right about Chicago not being a good college sports town, because we've got five franchises here, but really the Big East plays and the Big Ten plays, and God bless Northwestern, but it's not Ohio State in Chicago. It's not even the impact that the University of Minnesota has in the Twin Cities. It just doesn't cut through, and I'm always hoping that it has a higher profile in Chicago. I don't know if that's going to happen. It's hard to compete with the likes of the Bears and the Cubs and whatnot. Hey, Griff, play some music for us, please. Okay, I hate this. Wait, I'm coming around now. Grammys are this weekend, and this is our Vibe Score segment, where on Saturdays we ask Griffin to catch us up on a few things we may have missed. He presents them to us as a 100-point scorable question. How much do you like it? How much do you not like it? What were we listening to there, Griff?
Childish Gambino.
Childish Gambino.
Alter ego of Donald Glover, the comedian, writer, rapper, actor who stars in Atlanta on FX. That was from his album Awaken My Love, that is nominated for Album of the Year. That song, Redbone, is nominated for Record of the Year at the Grammys tomorrow night.
Boy, I feel so out of it. And I always have been, but I'm not up on that. I think, the first time I'm hearing that.
He's put out a few albums and a few more mixtapes as a rapper, and then this album was sort of a departure with a lot of singing. It was more folk, funk, and soul-inspired than his previous stuff, and very well received. This song was huge. It was like a big streaming hit, like 200 million listens on YouTube, and Spotify numbers are huge. So
okay,
this was a big breakthrough, and he's nominated for a couple awards tomorrow night. So
here's my gut reaction to that, Griff. 75. My Vibe Score, a 75.
We didn't really get to the breakdown,
unfortunately. You want me to hear more?
No, it's okay.
Okay. Sam Panionovich, whatever that was.
62.
Do you know that song, Sam? It's a big one.
Yeah.
Domati Pongo, rate it, please.
99. I love that song.
Yeah, I mean, it's an old one. I mean, it's been around now for a year. The Grammys are always really late to award stuff, though, because it's strange how dates and stuff work out for them. So, yeah, I give it an 85. It was a huge, huge hit.
The only reason I deducted 1 point is because it samples Bootsy Collins without sampling it. He replayed Rather Be With You by Bootsy Collins, and I don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah, I'm curious. I've heard people say if you watch like the making of the song, you'll hear it entirely differently. I don't know. Have you seen
behind? I haven't seen that yet.
Studio footage? Because it's definitely voice modulated. That's not what he sounds like exactly. So I'm curious, but...
That's what threw me off, the voice modulation. I thought, why don't you kids just sing into the microphone and stop doing that fancy stuff? That's what I was thinking.
Fair.
That's what you said, too.
I kind of did. Sorry about that. Give me something else to rate here, Griff.
The Oscar nominations came out. I wrote a little thing about it on your Facebook page.
Yeah. On Facebook, I'm King John. Griff's analysis, the things that surprised or pleased him the most. That's on my Facebook page.
It seems like two front runners for Best Picture have emerged, although it's hard to tell this year. Everything's kind of up in the air, so I'm curious to see how it'll unfold. But it seems like The Shape of Water, with 13 nominations and 3 billboards outside Ebbing, Missouri, have emerged as two front runners. So we'll put Shape of Water at 100, 3 billboards at 0. What do you think has a better chance of winning? Or if you... When you edge closer to 50, that means something else might win.
Yeah, right, because for me it would be, I don't know, it's... All right, here's what I want. I don't want Shape of Water to win. I like that movie, but it's just not a regular movie. I want people to be able to go see movies and like them and get them. And
I want people to go see regular movies, just a regular movie.
Can we just get Tom Hanks in a movie? And he was in a movie. And I haven't heard people say that The Post is going to win.
I don't think it's that good. So
maybe that's the problem with it.
It's fine. It's pretty good. But...
Three Billboards was the best movie I saw this year and Get Out. But I'm rooting. If it's between Three Billboards and Shape of Water, I'm saying Three Billboards.
Well, I was asking what you think will win.
Five.
But you're going with your heart. It's so hard to tell. I'm not really down for either of these winning. I like Shape of Water better, but I didn't love it. Get Out would really be the one that would be super. Have you guys seen either of these?
No, I don't think they have.
I've only seen Get Out.
And that was awesome.
Yes, I loved Get Out, but I hear more about Shape of Water, which makes me think it might win.
And it's going to win a lot of those technical awards, I think, and I think deservingly. I think it's a beautiful... Guillermo del Toro is the director, and he's like a visual artist first and foremost, but the story drags a little bit. Not all of it works like gangbusters for me. So I wouldn't hate to see it win, but I think it's going to sweep up a lot of those smaller awards and gain momentum and win Best Picture, too.
Yeah, maybe
so I'm going to say 70, because I could see something else taking it,
too. You're leaning into Shape of Water on that one.
As the probable winner. Not what I would like to see win, but yeah. Have you seen the KFC campaign with Reba McEntire?
Yes!
Now the hard-hitting news we can finally get to.
I love the whole KFC campaign. Who is it that's been doing it before, Reba?
Well, they've kind of been shuffling people through. Like, they had some WWE wrestler do it and, like, kind of odd faces. And then Reba is the first woman, I believe. It's so insane.
I was a big fan of the KFC campaign where they have the king tackling players on the football field with a goofy mask.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I loved that.
I love that campaign, and I like this one. It makes me laugh every time it's on, or at least I smile while I'm watching the commercial. They win if you do that.
I remember when Randy Quaid was the voice of one of the commercials.
Right.
He was the colonel.
Yeah,
yeah.
Right.
Well, that's what this is. This is Reba.
Now it's Reba. For Reba, by the way. I mean, a lot of women might say, you know what, that's not my role in the big picture here. No, thank you. She said, yeah, I'll do it.
They went to Jessica Chastain, but she said, no, I'm busy.
Did they really?
No, I'm kidding. As far as I know,
don't
they didn't
be that easy, Domity. Your threshold needs to be higher on something like that. I want to throw one out.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't get to score it. 100.
100?
More. I don't actually like this campaign very much. I think it's very stupid. I mean, not in a good way, but more Reba on TV is fine. I'm always up for more Reba. Okay, what's next?
Celebrity couple, you love them or hate them. You know, like Kim and Kanye, blah, blah, blah. Well, the new celebrity couple I'm asking you to vibe on, Aaron Rodgers, Danica Patrick.
Are they together?
Yes.
Did not know that. I have no feeling about it, really. He was dating Olivia Munn for a while, the actress Olivia Munn, but I guess that's over, huh?
Done with that, moved on to Danica. Danica dropped her boyfriend. They're together now.
Do you have strong feelings about this?
I do not like them as a couple.
Please do tell why.
Yeah, because I think either of them are kind of brittle And together you go, yeah, I'm sure you did find each other. You know, I don't know. Don't you get a warm fuzzy for some of them? You cheer for them. You root for them. And these two, I think it's subtraction by addition.
You know what a lot of people, I think, are learning about for the first time this award season is Paul Thomas Anderson, the writer-director of Phantom Thread, a movie I cannot stop talking about, is married to... I don't know if they're married, but they've been together a long time and have kids. Him and Maya Rudolph from Saturday Night Live. Did you know that?
No.
Best celebrity couple ever. That's my number one.
All right, give us one more, Griff.
Oh, I don't know. What?
I've got one for you. Pop-up bars. Are we done with pop-up bars? They have a shining pop-up bar. And
why?
I just wonder if,
and why in January?
Yeah, that's kind of weird, isn't it? You think Halloween or, well, maybe Oscar season, I don't know, but it's not nominated. There is a Shining pop-up bar on Chicago, in Chicago Avenue in Chicago right now. And I don't know if you've been to enough of them and have been disappointed, or it's always fun when you go there and it's awesome.
You've had one bad experience at one, and that's what's driving this.
I'm giving them a 7.
Because I went to one once, and it wasn't fun. I went to the Stranger Things bar. We talked about that, I think, at the time.
And?
It was fine. I would not rate it highly, but it wasn't bad either. Whatever.
Patty, I just said Patty Vasquez, and I don't know why. Maybe because Amy just walked in, and they both have dark hair. I can't explain the use of the word Patty just now. It's 11:52, and this is WGN, and Amy does say hi to us in a minute. My Wednesday show this week, we'll visit with an attorney we've talked to before. There is legislation afoot at the federal level to change loan repayments. If you have a student loan, there are debt forgiveness programs out there. There's lower interest rate programs you can get on there. There's a program that says that you will only pay a percentage of your disposable income, and it will only be 10%. Those thresholds could change. So if you are a firefighter, a teacher, a policeman, if you're a public employee, or if you have a federally sponsored student loan, you need to hear what you need to do on our Wednesday show. Amy Guth, how are you?
Great. How's it going?
I'm doing well. Doing well. And I've had mixed feelings about that all along. I've always thought that you should pay your loan. I mean, sure, minimize the payments, but you have to pay all of it. And there's programs out there that if you pay, if you make every payment for 10 years, whatever you owe after that goes away. And more power to you if you can sign up for that. We'll tell you on Wednesday how that works. But, you know, speaking on behalf of those of us who paid off our whole loan.
I was going to say, I have no student debt.
Where was that when I was paying off my Southern Illinois University
debt? I worked my way through and paid as I went and that kind of thing and took out loans and all that. And I paid it off as quickly as I could. So I also feel like, wait, where was that when I was doing
it? It seems like every time there's a program that comes along like that, I always miss the boat. And that's about me. I'm happy for you. We'll talk about it on Wednesday. What are you doing on the show today?
Well, we're going to talk about the chairwoman, now former chairwoman of the Federal Reserve. We're going to be talking about that a little bit. And then an update on Outcome Health, which is a startup that has been embroiled in controversy that we've been talking
Outcome
about.
Outcome Health?
Yeah, it is. It's a medical startup that had really huge funding. And then there were some fraud allegations. There was just a lot to it. And it was just really ongoing and ongoing. So it looks like a little bit of there's been an olive branch. So we're going to be talking about that. And then we're going to talk a little bit about there's a piece in the New York Times right now about how mergers have reduced competition, not just for consumers, but for workers. So we're going to take a look at that with one of the people who wrote it.
There's a piece in the New York Times right now, too. I just saw it today, and I'll probably end up talking about it on my show on Monday. If a neighbor can see you naked, do you have to cover up? That was the headline.
Wow.
If you are, I don't know, in your yard, in your house, and the neighbors can all see you got no clothes on, the obligation is on who? Them to look
That's
away or you to cover up?
That is interesting.
In the New York Times.
Speaking of neighbors, I learned, and maybe this is on me, I should have known this all along, but I learned yesterday that the way we believe to understand good fences make good neighbors is totally incorrect. That in fact the origin is about when there were like little rock and pebble fences, mm-hmm. and each spring you would have to come together with your neighbor to rebuild it.
Uh-huh.
So it's about
being friendly, not making divides.
It's about meeting your neighbor, not putting up a wall in
Correct.
Between you.
It's not about, I'm just going to build this giant thing and not look at you, and therefore we're going to get along great. It's not like absence makes the heart grow fonder.
Right, right,
it's
right.
It's about teamwork makes the dream work, really. It's like that.
That's good. That's good. More good coming up in a minute on WGN.